This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Two best words in sports, Mel Mock. This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. Mel Kiper, Mock Draft 4.0, officially out, ladies and gentlemen.
Hot off the press.
Let's go. Dive into it. Here we go. All right. In a stunning development with the number one pick, Mel Kiper Jr. has the Chicago Bears taking Caleb Williams.
What? QB, didn't see that coming.
USC. Now, here's where this gets interesting, because I'm wondering whether or not we are ready to go from pencil to pen. Maybe not Sharpie, but pencil to pen on 2 and 3. He has Washington taking Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU, and New England at 3 taking Drake May, QB, UNC. Are we ready to go from pencil to pen on this? Do we feel like Jaden Daniels is in at number 2 to Washington, guys?
No, and Jaden Daniels has a visit with the Washington Commanders early next week. We're going to learn a lot about, you know, how the Commanders view the quarterbacks in this class based on what happens in the coming weeks, but they've been playing it close to the vest in terms of, you know, not letting people know exactly which way they're leaning. But I have a feeling at this stage in the process, Adam Peters, their new general manager, knows where he wants to go. And I just think that it makes so much sense based on the offense that they're going to run under Cliff Kingsbury to go the direction of Drake May. Mm-hmm. You know, with the air raid principles that Mac Brown had at his offense at Carolina, knowing the pedigree from Drake May, knowing the family background, but also knowing that his high school coach was Josh McCown down at Myers Park High School in Charlotte, and then having Philip Rivers as a mentor. It just seems like all of the things are aligning for Washington to take Drake May, because he is more of a seamless fit into what they want to do from a football philosophy standpoint on the offensive side of the ball. Now, listen, they would be well within their rights to take Jaden Daniels. I think he's a fine player. There are some questions about his frame, his stature, and being able to hold up in an 18-week regular season. But, I think this is where the draft starts, because based on this decision, we could see some big shakeups in the top five of this draft, which would lay the groundwork for what we see for the remainder of the first round.
No doubt, which is why I'm not ready to put it in pen either. Not only because I'm not 100% sold on the fact that Washington is going to take Jaden Daniels, I'm also not 100% sold on the fact that New England's going to be picking at number 3. We have a lot of quarterback needy teams that could potentially move up. We know the New England Patriots are in rebuild mode. I know that they desperately need a quarterback, but if they don't get the quarterback that they deem to be the right fit, I could absolutely see them trading out of that number 3 spot, getting a bunch of capital to build their team in other ways.
Very interesting. So he then Mel has Arizona, Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, wide receiver, Ohio State. There has been some conversation recently about whether or not he actually is the top receiver in the draft, whether or not Malik Nabers out of LSU, Roma Dunze out of Washington could potentially jump him. It feels unlikely that that would happen at this point. And then Mel at number 5, this is the biggie. He has a trade between the Chargers and the Vikings. In Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, ESPN.com, right now, he has the Chargers getting pick 11 and 23, as well as a 2025 first rounder, and the Vikings getting pick number 5 and using it on Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, I don't see the Minnesota Vikings giving up all that draft capital for J.J. McCarthy.
Really?
I don't see them giving up all of that draft capital just to get the 4th best quarterback in this class. I'm with Smalls on this one. I think there's a huge move that we're in store for early on in night 1 of the draft, and I think it's about the Minnesota Vikings trying to get up to that 3rd overall pick and swapping with the New England Patriots. And just to add more validity, more context to the point that you were making about New England not picking at 3, Jerod Mayo, their new head coach, he says to our very own Mike Reese, and I quote, "I'm not asking for patience, but I kind of am. It's a process. It's not only about the quarterback. Obviously, you want to have QB1 and build around him, but it doesn't always happen when you want it." I think the New England Patriots are laying the groundwork to their fan base that we might be in the business of trading out of 3 just because of how many premium draft picks we can get for that slot, mm-hmm, and potentially getting a quarterback along the process early on in the draft this year that we can, you know, transition to, that we can redshirt maybe in year 1 as a part of this process. So maybe you don't get an elite quarterback prospect. Maybe you don't get one of the big 3. Maybe you get the 4th or 5th best quarterback, but you pick up, you know, 2 or 3 extra premium picks in order to do so. To me, I think that's what Jerod Mayo and Elliot Wolf are setting up for in New England, because let's face it, this is a roster that needs a lot of talent influx.
Let's make that trade then. Is the trade that Mel proposed to get number 5 one that we think New England would make at 3? 11, 23, and the 2025 first rounder from the Vikings. Does New England trade out of 3 for that?
Yes.
Okay, so they make that trade. So in this scenario.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and in that case, then why wouldn't you try to jump up to number 3 instead of 5?
Yeah, that's my point,
because
though.
New England may not make the deal. I think it goes back to which of the guys
New
England
like
better.
Which quarterback is on the clock. If Drake May is there when New England picks, then I think that they would take Drake May. But if Jaden Daniels is the quarterback, I think New England would trade out of that spot. And they would allow Minnesota to then move up. And if you're Minnesota, it makes all the sense in the world. I get to have an LSU quarterback and Jaden Daniels throwing to an LSU receiver and Justin Jefferson, the best in the game. And then I've got Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, and Aaron Jones in my backfield. It just feels like it's a fit for what Kevin O'Connell wants to do. I'm not sure that Jaden Daniels is a fit from a scheme standpoint, from a cultural standpoint with the New England Patriots and where they're at. So it's just, I would say this. I think they can get a ransom for that number 3 overall pick, especially if they don't have conviction on the guy that's there. And when it comes to the Jaden Daniels of it all, the thing that I am most concerned with, the thing that I am skeptical about is the frame, is the stature. You know, he's not a very big guy, didn't weigh in at the scouting combine. To me, that's a red flag. I think he was around 210 pounds at his pro day. That's great. But, I mean, I just wonder how much weight he can add to that frame. Because I would say this, being a 210-pound quarterback at 6'4", ain't going to cut it in the National Football League.
Evan, as our resident New England Patriots fan, how would you feel if they traded out of that number 3 spot and didn't get one of these quarterbacks?
Well, my mind is racing here with something, because I'm glad you asked that, because now I'm starting to think, could New England make that deal? Because I don't want them to trade out of 3. I think they should just take one of these quarterbacks, right? Whoever's left between the two guys, Daniels and May. Could they trade out of 3, get the pick that the trade that Mel suggested, that CeCe said they would have to make it 3, and then trade back up to 5? Could they then give 11 and 23 for 5 with the Chargers and get McCarthy at 5?
I don't think you have to get McCarthy at 5. I think McCarthy goes closer to 10 than he is at 5.
Oh, with Minnesota out of the mix, he falls.
Yeah. They do the waiting thing like they did with Mac?
I think I'm not going to say they can wait at 11 and get him. I still think you probably got to get in the top 10 to get the fourth best quarterback off the board. But that guy is probably going to go somewhere in the 7, 8, 9 range. I don't think that guy is going to go at number 5. So I think that there is an opportunity for New England to pick up, 3 premium draft picks between the two ones Minnesota would give them this year and a one next year. And you still have an opportunity to get back in the top 10 and take J.J. McCarthy, a guy that you can then redshirt and sit behind Jacoby Brissett.
In that scenario, I'm all in on that. Now,
all in on that as a Patriots fan.
Well, if you tell me, okay, so what do I like about J.J. McCarthy? 2 things. 1, played for Harbaugh. 2, wins games. Right? Like, I don't need flashy. Like, at its core, Patrick Mahomes wins games. That's what he does more than anything else, right? So if you're telling me I'm picking up a second first rounder next year, I'm manipulating the draft this year where I get J.J. McCarthy and I don't have to play him. That's a big part of this year. I don't want to play him in year 1.
You don't have to, because you have Jacoby Brissett.
Right. And if I don't take him top 3, I don't have to play him. If you take a guy top 3, you probably have to play him.
Probably.
Right? So yeah, you're presenting me a scenario that I'm interested in. I enter next year with 2 firsts. I get a quarterback, and are you telling me I still have an extra pick?
Yeah, you still have number 23.
Because I'm gonna give you 11 and a third,
mid-round pick, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in on that. Joe Shane of the Giants. Now, here's where we get a twist on this. Joe Shane of the Giants, their general manager, told Albert Breer of SI.com, quote, "We have multiple needs. We are going into year 3. People are assuming we're going quarterback, but we have other needs. If the quarterbacks go 1 through 4, then we're getting the second-best position player, not quarterback, at 6, which is okay, too." Does that throw off this scenario in terms of all these possible trades we're laying out here?
No, because I don't think the Giants are going with a quarterback in their first-round pick.
They're not one of the teams that could jump up past New England in that scenario.
No, I don't think they're doing that. I think they're going to go with Malik Nabers if he's still there on the board. He's a guy that's explosive. He's dynamic. You saw him talking about how he feels like he can help the New York Giants solve the riddle of what's going on at the quarterback position, help solidify that, help stabilize that. So I think the Giants are going with him, barring something completely unforeseen. And we know that there is going to be a team that's trading up into the top five. We know that's going to happen. So they're anticipating that too. That's baked into that. But I think they're locked in on Malik Nabers.
See, I view comments like that, and I don't believe anything that anyone says this time of year.
Yeah.
I totally have fallen for the smoke before, and I could absolutely see the New York Giants being a team that's putting it out there like, oh, yeah, we're not desperate for a quarterback, but meanwhile, they're scheming behind the scenes, figuring out what sort of package do we need to put together to make sure that we get our quarterback.
Now, to continue here on Mel Kiper's Mock Draft 4.0, here's where it gets even juicier. So we just talked about the top four quarterbacks, where they're going. Well, how about this? Mel has, in the second round of the draft, the New York Giants trading up with Carolina, taking Bo Nix, quarterback, Oregon, 33 overall. And he has the Rams trading up with their fellow L.A. team, the Chargers, at number 37 overall and drafting Michael Penix Jr. So many people have 5/6 quarterbacks in the first round. Mel has 4, and then those other 2 dropping into the second rounds.
Let me tell you what ain't going to happen. Michael Penix Jr. falling out of the first round. And we had Shefty on.
6th quarterback drafted.
And we had
scenario.
Shefty on last week, and he was just talking about the prospects of Michael Penix Jr. The Atlanta Falcons had him in for a workout over the weekend, and they were skeptical that he would be there when they pick him in the second round. Michael Penix Jr. will be a first-round pick. And I struggle to see a scenario where he falls out of the teens. To me, he's the 4th best quarterback in his class. The only concerns about him is his health. He's had 2 season-ending injuries, and when you have those types of injuries, when you have one to your shoulder, when you have one to your knee, teams are going to pay extra attention to it, and they're going to bake that in there. Now, there will be teams that have him undraftable because of the injury history, but it only takes one team to fall.
Undraftable?
Yeah, there will be teams
like
that will
off
have
the
them.
Board.
Yeah, because of the injuries.
Wow,
it's that strong, those injuries.
Well, when you talk about to your shoulder and to your knee, season-ending injuries for a quarterback. Yeah,
wow,
those are significant.
Wow,
teams will take them off the board.
Are we getting a little?
I don't think they should.
Right.
I'm not saying that they should, but just knowing that there are some NFL teams that are going to be more conservative when it comes to certain positions. And, of course, everybody is hypersensitive when it comes to quarterbacks.
Sure.
But I think the backstop for Michael Penix Jr. is somewhere in the teens, probably 13 to the Las Vegas Raiders. Somewhere in the mid-teens is where I think the backstop is for Michael Penix Jr. I don't think he's going to fall out of that range. Now, what I will say about the New York Giants, them taking a quarterback at the top of the second round makes a ton of sense because they don't have to be in a hurry to take a guy. They've got Drew Locke. Remember, they got him this offseason. They signed him as a free agent. They've got Daniel Jones for at least one more year, even though he's coming off of an injury. They've laid the groundwork where they don't have to be desperate and they don't have to give up the farm in order to move up to take a quarterback that they have conviction on early in the draft.
I like them taking a quarterback at that spot, but what do you think about them taking Bo Nix with that pick?
Don't love it.
See, that's the thing that surprised me.
I don't love it.
But he could wear the blue blazer and the khakis.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. But does he have the arm talent?
But can he win games?
Does he have the arm talent to throw it around in MetLife?
I don't know. I'm just saying that the criteria for Giants quarterback, a lot of times you said it's blue blazer and khakis.
It is. No doubt about it now. Just check the track record. If you look good in a blue blazer and some khakis... I'm just saying.
I think day of draft, I may wear a blue blazer and khakis.
I'm just saying, I get drafted by the Giants. Blue blazer and khaki draft. Maybe that'll be our power rankings next week.
The top 5 blue blazer power ranking drafts. By the way, I think we've gotten some hints here. In talking about Mel's Mock 4.0, we have CeCe's Mock 2.0 tomorrow.
Hello.
Smalls, I'm pretending CeCe's not here. I think we got some hints. I think he's going to make trades with the Patriots, maybe 2 trades with the Patriots. I think he's going to give the backstop, as he said, to Penix with the Raiders or maybe the Saints.
Oh.
And I think you're not supposed to say, mm-hmm. You just ruined the bit. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Hate him or love him, Caleb's going to go number one. We are on. That was good.
You should have said he was on top.
That would have been better.
Hate him or love him, he's going to be on top.
Yeah, that would have been better. Unsportsmanlike presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to save money. When you bundle your auto policy with home, condo, or renters, you'll earn a multi-policy discount. Easy to bundle, easy to save. Visit progressive.com. By the way, quick update on Sports ESPN on social. Most likely to get one more after Tiger said one more yesterday. We put up Tiger, LeBron, Steph, or Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Steph is running away with it.
Wow.
Really? Which doesn't make any sense to me, considering LeBron's team has been better this year. If you're going to pick a basketball player.
It has to be about what happened last night, though.
Just because the Warriors beat the
recency
Lakers.
Bias.
Yeah, recency
but Anthony
bias.
Davis didn't play.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And the Warriors hit 26 threes.
Very, very odd. I'm shocked. So Steph, 45.4. Second place is LeBron with 24. Tiger, 15.8. Rodgers in last, 14.8. All right. Yeah. So
every single Jets fan voted for Aaron Rodgers.
So far for our poll.
And I don't know if they even believed it. They just want to will it.
They want to will it, and they want me to be wrong. That's what it is.
If you could pick one of them to win again, forget likelihood.
Tiger. Without a doubt.
LeBron.
Well, he's a Lakers fan.
LeBron.
I'd probably say Steph.
LeBron. I mean, LeBron getting the five championships? Ooh, LeBron getting the five championships?
Then he's going all in next year. But he's like, all right, trade everyone. I need to get to six.
If he wins a title in year, what is it, 21?
21.
Like think about that.
I don't want to. Because the argument that I don't want to have will then start to pop up every single day. Oh,
yeah. What's the argument, Evan? Go ahead, say it out loud.
LeBron and Michael. All right. So
that's very Belichickian of you.
I'm just trying to do my job and worry about today. Greg McElroy, ESPN college football analyst, was on This Is Football podcast with our buddy Kevin Clark. He gave an interesting concern about Caleb Williams going number one overall to the Chicago Bears, the USC quarterback.
I look at all the players that have been drafted number one, number two, number three, way up there near the top of the draft. And seldom are the guys that ultimately go on to become elite players. Every single one of them has a gigantic chip on their shoulder. Like they're mad at the world, or they create some type of false narrative about themselves that people don't believe in them. Caleb Williams has never had that. I mean, Caleb Williams, from the time he stepped on campus at Oklahoma to the time he stepped on campus at SC, he has never experienced adversity. Very little adversity as far as how he was received and how he was portrayed as the next best guy. Even when they went 7-6 this year, or 6-6 or whatever, 7-5, it wasn't because of Caleb. I mean, he did his part, and he did. And a lot of that is true. But I do wonder about, is there a sense of entitlement? Is there that chip on the shoulder that's going to keep him going 10, 12 years down the road, the way it does Mahomes, who's still pissed that he got drafted 10th. Like, still, to this day, is mad about that.
I think it's a very interesting comment that he made. And obviously, you know, we think back to the struggles that Peyton Manning dealt with in his life getting to the Hall of Fame. I think it is an interesting concern in general. But Caleb Williams.
No, it's not.
Okay, go ahead.
It's not a legitimate concern.
It's an interesting concern.
It's an interesting concern, but it's ridiculous. And are we having this conversation if we don't see Caleb Williams crying after the loss to Washington at USC senior night? Like, when he's crying and his mom...
Why is that a bad thing?
No, but that's what I don't understand. Like, are we having this conversation if that moment doesn't happen? Does Greg McElroy go on a podcast, put it on wax, that's a concern of his if he doesn't see that? Probably not. And I don't get why we're so critical of these athletes emoting after what they perceive to be big moments in their careers. The guy cares. He was emotional after a back-and-forth game where he came up short. I don't understand it. I think it's utterly ridiculous. And then the whole thing about, oh, well, how much adversity has this guy seen? He was always viewed as the best quarterback. Well, listen, Eli Manning was always seen as the best quarterback, number one overall pick. Peyton Manning was always seen as the best quarterback, number one overall pick. Andrew Luck, number one overall pick, always seen as the best quarterback. Matt Stafford from Georgia, always seen as the best quarterback, number one overall pick. How about Trevor Lawrence? Won a national championship his freshman year, number one overall pick.
Chosen one.
Those are like that. That's what I'm saying. It's utterly ridiculous, this concern that Greg McElroy is floating out there. How is he going to respond to adversity? I don't know. He's always been viewed as the best quarterback. He's never been doubted. Stop yourself, man. Stop yourself. Listen, these guys are who they are for a reason. They have a ton of confidence, and I say this all the time about quarterbacking. It's about the 6 inches between your ears. And Caleb Williams has given me no reason to doubt his mental toughness or his ability to be able to adjust to the pro game.
But we are at that point with Caleb Williams where we don't really have questions about his actual game. We don't have questions about him physically or really from a football standpoint. So you start thinking about the environment that he would go into. This is how we have to kind of handicap whether or not we think he's going to be able to have success at the next level. What potential obstacles could come his way, and how is he going to adjust to that or respond to that? And I get what Greg McElroy is saying in a sense, because the examples that he's giving of a Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady is certainly a famous example Rogers. Of this, Aaron Rodgers. A lot of these guys really do have to have that chip on their shoulder. They have to think that people are doubting them. And we have never done that with Caleb Williams. For years now, we've talked about him as the best quarterback in football. The fact that he's going to be the number one overall pick. We point to him as someone that's going to transform a franchise. And I get where Greg McElroy is coming from, thinking, does that in any way lessen that chip or your desire to win? Now, Caleb Williams has never given us any indication of that, but I do wonder how he's going to respond if he doesn't have immediate success or his skills don't translate immediately in the league.
He did respond on Twitter, and let's read what he had to say here at Caleb CSW. He said, "Let's go back to school again because I'm bored. Adversity," gives a definition, "a state or instance of serious or continued difficulty or misfortune. Year one, didn't start freshman year. Year two, popped hammy championship game first quarter, lost because of my hammy. Year three, 7-5, my last year of college ball." I don't know if that's the exact adversity necessarily that McElroy is talking about. I'm not sure about that. I think there's examples both ways. I think there's great examples, as you just mentioned, Smalls, of quarterbacks in college that faced a level of adversity that may have helped them in years to come. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, as you just mentioned, CeCe, would not be examples of that.
No, and their daddy played in the league.
Expensive? What did I just say? Insanely successful.
Yeah,
I mean, there's examples both ways of this. If that's your concern, okay, you're able to express it, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be good.
Here's the thing. If we want to talk about concerns that we have for Caleb Williams, that is not at the top of the list. That's not even on my list.
What is?
My biggest concern for Caleb Williams is, can he be disciplined enough? Can he play on schedule? Can he hit his back foot, get the ball out on time, or is he going to be overly reliant on second reaction plays, scrambling, getting outside of the pocket, things of that nature? That's what I want to see from Caleb Williams. I mean, Ryan Leaf outlined the concerns months ago when he said the biggest issue with Caleb Williams is 75% of what we've seen him do in college, he ain't going to be able to do in the league. Athletes are too big, too fast, too strong. Mm-hmm. So can he rely on his offensive line, manipulate the pocket, which he's shown the ability to do, but play on time? That's the biggest concern I have for Caleb Williams, and it's a legitimate concern, because if you're going to win, if you're going to be a successful quarterback in this league, you've got to be able to win from the well. You've got to be able to deliver from the pocket. And so that is enough of a concern for us to be talking about in the pre-draft process, not this nonsense about his mental toughness or what kind of adversity this kid has been through his life.
We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome.
so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Kimberly A. Martin is here, ESPN NFL reporter. Don't mind us while we're talking MTV reality shows and squatting laws. That's what our break just was, right?
And how we would be besties.
You are... I said that I think Kimberly and I are actually way more similar than she ever wants to acknowledge. And then she started retroactively, hypothetically grading the level of friendship we would have had in high school.
Yeah, we would have been like science class buddies. Like the teacher put you together and it's like, why am I paired with this guy? And then he ends up being like one of the smart kids. You're like, all right, cool. Like, you know.
Yeah, but he can't sit at the lunch table with the cool
kids.
Yeah,
yeah. No.
I was a high school quarterback.
Were you?
But Evan, not a good one. Not a good one.
Smalls. Details not important. Important on that one. Just saying.
I went to a D3 school, so I understand like going to, you know, the recognition isn't always there like mm-hmm. like you want, so I get it.
All right. I face a lot of adversity. I mean, what
okay.
Wow.
unlike Caleb Williams,
the
right?
The mean streets of Westchester County.
Yeah. I face no adversity. I'm still waiting for adversity to face here right. At this point. You have to acknowledge who you are a little bit. In the grand scheme of life, I did not face the level of adversity that other people face. I'm very fortunate for that. I'm not going to ever deny that. Caleb Williams has earned the right to not face as much adversity because he's really good at what he does for a living. Mm-hmm. Does that matter, the level of adversity, Kmart, that he will face going into the NFL?
Well, here's, because I even screenshotted, Caleb took issue with the Greg McElroy thing and just him saying like everything that happened to him during his college career. I think adversity is different for everybody, right? There are different levels to it. I think even a guy like Joe Burrow walks around with a chip on his shoulder and people are looking at him like, bro, like you were the top pick in the draft. What are you talking about? Joe Burrow still has in the back of his mind, like, I was at Ohio State, mm-hmm. like, and I went to LSU. You know, so I think it gets very tricky to start quantifying, like, levels of adversity when you're looking at guys, especially star athletes and guys who are projected to go number one overall. Because even when you don't have – who was I talking to?
Probably me in high school.
No, I was talking to Garrett Wilson a couple years ago.
That's different.
About Mike White, of all people. Mm-hmm. And he was like, Mike knows adversity. Like, uh-huh. small guy have to make a name for himself trying to get to the NFL. I had a different – I didn't have as much adversity as him going to a big program. But we all have to find that thing that motivates us, that thing that didn't work out. And I think it's different for all guys. And Caleb – that's not somebody I'd want to pop off about in that frame.
Yeah, especially when you consider who's the one that's popping off, right?
You said it.
Born on third base, thought he hit a triple.
Wow.
I will say this, Kmart. When it comes to the concerns that NFL teams mm-hmm. have over Caleb Williams, because we go back to that moment at USC losing against Washington on senior night and him crying in his mother's arms post-game. How much
just
of that...
Just how he said crying in his mama's arms. I know that's what happened.
No, I'm just saying...
He's been supportive of
it's not a concern for me, but how much of a concern is it for NFL teams? Because that's an optic that a lot of people hold on to in their evaluation of Caleb Williams.
Yes, it is. I think NFL teams, I think society in general, we tend to talk out of both sides of our mouths. Like, we want guys, we talk about the importance of mental health, guys showing their emotions. Like, we want them to show emotion on the field, but the toughness, not the cry. You know what I mean? Like, all of these things, these are different kids. This generation is different. Like, they're going to tell you what they think. They are going to, if they want to be emotional, like tears, they're going to give you that. I think if you want, he cares. I that's how I saw it. And I think we have to allow room for these guys to be the individuals. As a reporter, I hate guys who are the cookie cutter, say exactly what you expect them to say at all times. Caleb being himself, I like that. That's what I want from somebody in the media. I want to know exactly who you are and what you think.
Kimberly, when I look at the Greg McElroy comments, one of the things that I took away from it is that Caleb Williams has been so great, and we mm-hmm. assume that he's going to translate at the NFL mm-hmm. level, that we're trying to in any way examine it to see what might be an obstacle for him. Are you hearing anything from anybody around the league about any concerns about Caleb Williams?
No, because even when I try to put out there, like, any chance something crazy happens and the Bears don't want to select him first, and GMs and execs are like, you are crazy. That is not going to happen. I do think there was not concern. I think heading into his pro day, talking to scouts and talking to execs, the things that they wanted to see were, can he do the simple? Because we see, you know, we see him scrambling. We see him taking ordinary plays and doing the extraordinary. But in the NFL, this is what people have to understand. All of these kids who get drafted, they're used to being great. They're used to being the best. Mm-hmm. When you draft in the top of the draft, you're usually going to a team that wasn't good last year or an organization that's starting the rebuild. The losing, that is a new thing. Mm-hmm. Again, I mentioned Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, all these guys that come here from winning programs, now they're slapped in the face with, oh, we are not on the best team. Like, what is this? That is Caleb will face adversity, dealing with media, questions that he'll have to answer daily. Like, that is going to be adversity. And
just going to the Chicago Bears.
Just going to the Bears. The history that comes with the Bears and the pressure. Not saying that he's not used to pressure, but this is different. Every situation we've all been, you go to the next level, the stakes are higher. So I think he is going to face adversity in the NFL, but he seems to have a good family structure around him. He clearly has support of his family, and I think he has his circle, which is important.
Kmart, it's interesting because we're talking about him going to the Bears. We're talking about the history of the Bears, the laundry, all the poor quarterback play. But what needs to be constantly reminded, I think, of to people is that it's not their pick. They won 7 games last year. So the level of losing that typically a quarterback goes into with the number one overall pick may not actually happen. Because if he can improve them by a game or two, they're hovering around a playoff spot in year one.
Fair. The pushback, my pushback to that, and I don't know what the Bears will be because this is a completely new offensive staff. So I don't know. I believe that they're going to have the right quarterback in place. But I also haven't seen the staff together. And I think a lot of people looked at Matt Eberflus and thought, why is he still the head coach?
Right.
So no, this current regime as we know it did not draft Justin Fields. They now get to reset all of that history. But Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus, they're not exempt from being a part of that history. So yeah, they have an opportunity to show, you know what, with the top pick, we can get the quarterback of our dreams and we can win a lot of championships.
Kmart, in Mel Kiper's mock draft that dropped early this morning, he had the New England Patriots taking Drake May with the 3rd overall pick. Mm-hmm. Now, new head coach Jerod Mayo had some interesting comments to our Mike Reese earlier this week. He said, you know, and I quote, when you look at our team, I'm not asking for patience, but I kind of am. It's a process. It's not only about a quarterback. Obviously, you want the QB1 and to build around him, but it doesn't always happen when you want it to. And he cited Nick Caserio, former Patriots personnel executive.
Now in Houston.
Yeah. And he said that it took 2 years before Nick Caserio actually landed his quarterback in C.J. Stroud. So I'm curious to know how much
leeway should we give the Patriots?
Not leeway, but I mean, how is it outside of the realm of possibility to think that the New England Patriots could trade out of the 3rd overall pick knowing that they need a quarterback?
I'm interested in what the Patriots do because you can make a very strong case for both options. Mm-hmm. Because if you're Jerod Mayo and you take over, you're filling Bill Belichick's shoes, and I know he's not looking at it like that, right? But you take over one of the best dynasties that we've known forever, that now their owner is literally sick of the losing and is like, we need to do something. And now you bring in Jerod Mayo and he's like, I can't turn this water into wine just yet. Like, you know, it's going to take time. And I think in the NFL, we don't give that sort of grace and patience to head coaches and GMs and quarterbacks, right? I could see them trading back because he's right. Like, they need help. They need whoever they have at quarterback needs weapons. Like, they need to fortify this roster on both sides. But if there's a quarterback you love, I'd be hard-pressed to, like, pass on that because how do you know you're going to be picking that high again for a guy that could be your future? So
you better not be.
Fair, but the Bears didn't think they'd be in this position either, right? 2 years in a row. So I would get the quarterback, but I'm not Jerod Mayo. The media, the fans who are sick of losing, who are sick of looking at Mac Jones and Bailey Zappe, I don't have to deal with them. So I can understand if, for Gerard Mayo's sake, he's like, let me build up this roster with some actual great, great draft picks.
Kmart, we'll see you in science class coming up here. Always
AP
getting
bio, let's go.
I failed a bio test in 10th grade, so you don't want me to help. Kmart, always getting it done. You'll see her on Get Up and First Take. CC Granger, for the ones who get it done each and every day.
Yes, for the ones who get it done, like Caleb Williams at Oklahoma and at USC. Granger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgranger.com or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We will get to our producer, Pat Costello, in just a second, but major breaking news. Adrian Wojnarowski, of course, the best NBA reporter out there, about Giannis Antetokounmpo. He got hurt last night. Woj has just tweeted, after an MRI, Giannis' left Achilles tendon is fully intact, and his return to play will come with how quickly his left calf strain heals, sources tell ESPN. So timeline still TBD, obviously, with this. But the first place, guys, that I went mentally is, I remember when Kevin Durant hurt his calf, and we all then saw him hurt his Achilles, and those two are obviously tied together. It doesn't mean that Giannis's Achilles is going to be a problem. It's just, guys, where my mind went on this.
Yeah, and if your mind went there, then you know that players and coaches' minds yeah. go there, too.
They know, like, it a little bit better than I knew.
Level of sensitivity when it comes to how you're going to manage this injury, and none of that spells out anything good for the Milwaukee Bucks, because this is a guy that they obviously need. I said it before, I'll say it again. When they have one of their two big cogs missing in the lineup, that being Damian Lillard or Giannis, this team is 4-10. So, I mean, that doesn't put them in a great position no matter who their draw is in the first round of the Eastern Conference field. So, I am concerned about the Milwaukee Bucks, because even if Giannis is able to play, what version of him are you going to get? And is that going to be good enough to get out of the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, that tweet from Woj, if you're a Bucks fan, good news, bad news. Good news, Achilles intact, absolutely. Bad news, still has a calf strain, and we don't know how long that's going to take for him to recover from.
Yeah,
Giannis is as tough as they come. You have to wonder, is it worth rushing back this year? That has to be asked. There, like, if this happened to your guy, Anthony Edwards, if it happened to Shea, Gilgeous Alexander, if it happened to Jokic, when you're looking at it and you're like, we could win a title this year?
That makes sense.
You rush back.
That makes sense, yeah.
I don't know that this team is good
enough
for him to
rush back.
Yeah, this
team is not winning the title. We had Legs in studio, and he was telling us that this team doesn't have enough players that are lockdown defenders in order to support having a guy that's a liability on the defensive side of the court in Damian Lillard. Like, it was different when you had Jrue Holiday as the anchor defensively. Like, you had somebody that was the tip of the spear, somebody that could, you know, limit what opposing backcourt players could do in terms of creating offense for themselves and others. You don't have that now. I mean, Damian Lillard, for as great a player he is, he's not known for his defensive prowess. And so when you don't have a lot of other guys on the court that are really good defenders, when you've got Damian Lillard out there, it creates a problem for your defense. And that's what we've been seeing bear itself out. And that's why this Milwaukee Bucks team gives up so many points in the paint. Like, think about it. They had a back-to-back stretch against the Wizards and the Memphis Grizzlies, where they gave up 146 points in the paint. in back-to-back games.
Well, Wes Unseld and Marc Gasol played really well in those games, respectively.
Well, all I'm simply saying is that, like, that is an issue with keeping guys out of the paint.
Right. There's no, and who are you playing against?
Exactly. And so that's not going to change whether Giannis comes back or not. That's still going to be an issue. And if you can't do that, then you're not winning a championship. So you're right. I think it's fair to ask the question, how aggressive should they be in trying to get Giannis back in the lineup, knowing that this team is going to struggle to win a title? Mm-hmm.
And P.S., it gives you an excuse.
If you're a doc?
Gives you an excuse. Hey, you know, we would have made a run in the playoffs, but Giannis was hurt. We don't know that to be true or false. It just kind of gives you a built-in excuse. All right, Pat Costello is over us talking about anything else but his. I'm over it. What do you got for us, Pat?
How would you guys feel about me moving to Arizona for 3 years? Because I've been reading up on these squatter laws, and it's pretty insane, and I definitely think I'm thinking about becoming one. Because, like, I could just live in someone's house for 3 years in Arizona and then just say I own it, and then I'm good. I mean, there's some other stuff that goes along with it, but, like, I don't know how this is a thing. Right, how are squatter laws a thing? It's insane, but also insane. I kind of want to be one.
I may regret asking this question. Can you walk us through the process in which you go to Arizona, and how do you get this house by just walking in? Explain
this. Find one.
So you just walk into a house, you unpack, you get in bed, and you never leave.
Well, I mean, you got to find one where someone's not living there. It can't so just be where someone's living already.
So someone has
a vacation home.
A vacation home.
Yeah.
You somehow get in, which is trespassing, is it not?
Only if you get caught.
Yeah.
Breaking and entering.
Yeah. You just set up shop and it's yours?
After 3 years.
That can't be legal.
Yeah, I think it's squatter laws or adverse possession. My only question is, why is that a law on the books? Why does that actually exist where you can go and actually squat in somebody's property and eventually it will be yours? How does that make sense?
It makes no sense at all. And if I was a property owner, I would be doing everything I could to try to get this law changed. So you're telling me someone, I can save up all my money, work really hard to buy a home, and that someone else can just break in and live there for 3 years and I can't do anything about it?
That's the part of the game I don't understand. Like, I get that there is some rhyme or reason that a lot of laws are on the books or in place. Somebody needs to explain to me, why was this ever a thing in American history? Why was this ever a thing where you could go into somebody else's property and stay there for a period of time, and then all of a sudden it becomes yours?
Yeah, what's the positive here?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what was the law put
that
in place for?
They didn't kick you. So I'm just thinking this out in my own personal life. I used to own a place in Florida. I used to go back and forth for work-related reasons. I don't anymore. But theoretically, when I was in New York, if somebody just moved into my place in Florida, I now have a roommate?
Yeah.
It's theirs too?
Well,
how is that legal?
At least they'll be willing to pay the cable bill.
How is that legal?
Have to put a bill in their name in order to claim.
Oh, that's what it is.
There. So that might be the case. I know that's what a lot of people do. I mean, that's a problem not only in Arizona, but it's a big problem here in New York too.
Which, like, is what? If somebody's a renter?
If people have a bill put in their name at a certain place, even though they don't have any legal claim to it, then all of a sudden they have an in to say that they are a tenant in that property.
That is so stupid.
I don't know. It's ridiculous to me.
Pat says, but
here's the thing. It's one of those things, Pat, where I don't hate the player. I just hate the game.
Like, I mean, you don't hate the player. You would not respect somebody for just moving into someone else's home.
Not if it's your home.
Yeah.
You wouldn't respect it if it's your home.
That's the point. Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably
all three of us.
I just don't understand why it's a thing, though. Why was it ever even a law? Like, why?
Someone just threw a pen at herself.
Because she was so upset and distraught, and I get it.
Justice for homeowners.
I don't understand why this was a law. Why was this ever a thing? Who decided this is a good idea, that somebody could literally post up in somebody else's crib, and if you stay 30 days or longer, then that means it's yours? How is that even possible?
It's the only way I'm ever going to be able to afford a house.
You should try it. What do you have to lose?
I mean, I could end up in prison.
I mean, everybody has to shoot their shot. At this point, just take somebody's crib.
That's We're scary. Squatting on Unsportsmanlike.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.